Good evening and welcome to episode 67 of the Deck Tees podcast, brought to you by LegitMTG.com. My name is Aaron Campbell. My guest tonight is special. He is one of the co-hosts of Monday Night Magic. He is the head content manager of MTG Bro Deals, and he is the most hated man in Magic the Gathering. Jack LaCroix, hello.
And Aaron, I would like to say that my wife and daughter are out of the house, and I put on my finest sweatpants for this evening. How are you, Aaron? Are you doing great?
Oh my, I do love a man in sweatpants. You know what I like. This is good.
I was sure to get the extra roomy ones in case you wanted to climb in here with me.
Oh my goodness. I like you. I like you. So thank you so much for coming on the show. This was a really big deal for me. We met actually my first appearance on Monday Night Magic, and I knew within seconds of talking to you that you and I were going to hit it off, and we seemed to get along well.
You're a firecracker.
You are too. And,
I wouldn't say so much, but you're very outspoken, you're very outgoing, and you're very bubbly, and I like that about you. So it was very flattering to get to come on the infamous Deck Tees at last, because this is quickly becoming the premier interview cast on the internet. I don't know if you know that about yourself, but you're getting quite internet famous.
No, it's funny, you actually have reminded me of that before. Like, I think I made a comment once before, and you were like, you do realize that you're not a nobody now, and I'm like, what?
Yeah, you've had John Finkel on, you've had quite a number of pros, you've had all the major heads from the content production side of things. You're big. You're much bigger than you think you are. So a pat on the back to you as well.
I'm going to need sweatpants if you keep this up. So let's get started. So the most hated man in Magic. Why, Jack LaCroix, are you the most hated man in Magic?
There's a little bit of a story behind that. So let's wind back the clock to when I was, let's say I was 18 or 19. Okay. I was really, really, really socially awkward, and I still am by large. Like, I'm very nervous to talk to you tonight. You probably can't tell, but I am. And I didn't really talk to people, and I was a big bookworm, and there were literally whole days I went without talking to other people. But one of my big things I did is I listened to Monday Night Magic, and it got to where Tom and Gavin Verhey, who now works for Wizards of the Coast, it got to where I felt like they were my friends, and they were great guys to listen to, and they were very good at making you feel, as a listener, that you were a part of things. So there came a point when they finally started opening up the call line, and I started calling them in every week, and pretty much my calls, and I think it was Eric from St. Louis, if you're familiar with that name, Mr. Suitcase, maybe?
Okay.
Both of us got to where we were the most played calls on the cast, so we were pretty much a part of the cast, and I thought it would be funny when I was a teenager to ask these extremely abrasive questions, you know, well, why isn't WotC just doing this, or fuck those guys, well, fuck them, and fuck this, because, you know, saying a lot of swear words in a row is very funny, right? So it got to where my local comic book store was going to start doing a podcast, and I emailed Tom for instructions on how to do this. And just very offhandedly, he was like, hey man, you know, we need an extra co-host tonight. Do you want to come on? And I was flabbergasted because it was, you know, the Tom was asking me to come on Monday Night Magic. Yeah. And it was mind blowing. And it was so embarrassing. I actually called my mom and told her I was going to do that. That goes to show you how much of a nerd I am. But anyways, so I go on there and I just absolutely fucking blew it because I was really, really nervous to be talking to Tom to start with. So I was just very animated and hyper exaggerating things and all this other stuff. And I blew the fuck out of that episode. And I don't even remember what episode number it is because it was like 130 or something like that, maybe 120. It was a long time ago. And that episode of Monday Night Magic got more comments than probably any single one we've had, except for when Tom officially announced he was leaving. And almost unanimously, all of them were, I fucking hate this guy. Like, fuck this guy. Get him off the air. Don't ever have him on again. And I was pretty much getting ready to hang up my hat with the Magic community then, just because, and this is something the community has always had a problem with. It wasn't a very welcoming atmosphere for somebody who was new into the online Magic community necessarily. And it's the complete opposite of what you experience when you go to your local game store. It was actually quite abrasive at times. But then Tom sent me the show notes again. And I sent him an email back and I was like, look, man, like, they hate my guts. You know, I really don't need to come back on Monday Night Magic, because my fear was that I would hurt the show by me being on it, and I didn't want to do that to something I really cared about.
Now, let me ask you, were you saying anything like particularly negative at the time, or did they hate you just because you were so awkward?
I was so awkward.
Okay.
That was all it was. I mean, I was very misinformed, because I had just started playing competitive Magic at that point. And so I had a lot of very lopsided opinions, like a lot of grinders do when they first start off. And Tom just said, "Hey man, you know what? If they hate you, you need to like live up to that. You need to live up to that image. You need to really make something out of that." And I sat there and I really thought about it, and he was right. And so I decided, since I was already at the bottom, I might as well just see how damn deep the rabbit hole went. And so I started being on Monday Night Magic regularly, and I would make all kinds of like horribly like very comments that I thought were funny at the time, like I'm gonna go to this GP with a bunch of dead supermodels in my trunk and see if I can't get some money from these nerds, and like just all this other shit that was really, really horrible. But people ate it up. And then I started getting a couple of emails from guys being like, "Yo, man, I'm a neckbeard too. I'm really socially awkward, and you being on here makes me feel better about myself." Well, all right then. Like, am I doing the right thing by being this horrible person that like makes necrophiliac jokes on the air? Like, that's good for you people, really? And so I just kept staying around and, again, just digging deeper and deeper to see how far it could go with being the most hated man in Magic. And it got to where I don't want to say I have feuds with these people, because I like Chris Mascioli more than he probably thinks I do, but people like Chris Mascioli calling me the cancer of the game and saying I needed to catch cancer and jump in front of a bus. And if famous people are saying that about you, you're obviously doing something right. So I've just kind of kept on that track ever since.
It's interesting that you would say that, because I sort of went through something similar when I played World of Warcraft. I had a blog called thestoriesofo.com, and I kind of occupied a similar space in the Magic community where I've always been a big fan of going behind the veneer. I don't like shiny. I don't like happy. I don't like plastic. And, when I would play WoW, I would always hear these stories of, "My guild is great. We kill things and we never fight and we get all this great loot and I never have a problem playing my class." And I was just like, bullshit. Like, you don't get along and you wanted that piece of loot that you deserved. And I always used to write a lot of really candid stories. And I did a lot of things that I rage quit a guild, which it was really taboo in the WoW community. And most people would never admit to that, much less talk about it. And I rolled a whole post and I was like, hell yeah, the guy was an asshole, I quit. And when you're yourself, I feel like it's a weird form of like natural selection. Like, it's a really good way of weeding out, the good people in your life and who can really hang and who can handle that. And, I was sort of like you, where, there were the people that didn't like me and thought I was a train wreck and thought I was controversial. But then there were the people that were like, "I've wanted to quit my guild," and they relate to that and they're like, I wish I could do that. Or there are the people who, there was a time where I didn't want to spec a certain way. And I remember getting into a really big debate over that. And there were people like, "Oh, you're a priest. You should really play two specs." And then there were the people who are like, fuck discipline. Like, I'm going to be holy and I'm going to be awesome. And it's weird how people do relate to that. And for every two people that swore they'd never follow me and swore that I was trouble, there was that one person that was like, "Be you. Please be you." And those are the people that I really kept writing for.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm at now with the whole thing. I mean, I try not to be as much of an abrasive asshole as I used to be, but there's still things that come up time to time where I feel more at ease giving my honest opinion on them. That's like this whole affair with MTGO crashing recently. I've said for years that WotC is really, really good at getting new customers. And of course they're good at that. They're freaking Hasbro. Like, they know how to market to people and get them to buy crap they don't need. But MTGO has historically had problems, and it wasn't a big issue for WotC to worry about that until recently, which is why they decided to do something about it. And those people who were affected were their long-term customers. But my gosh, if I say something bad about WotC, it's like this side of the fence is like, "Well, you're a horrible person for it. Oh my gosh, they make My Little Pony and all this other crap, and fuck you, man, for not believing it. Fuck." And then you have the other side of the fence that, yeah, but and I've tried gradually to use the title and the relative non-popular position I have for good, I guess is the best way of putting that. Because I've gotten to where a lot of people now, they take me seriously for whatever godforsaken reason. And I've kind of come full circle to where now I also have this position with Bro Deals where I am in a much more public eye and I have to work with a much wider audience of people. And that honestly has done a lot of good towards removing the assholishness of the title, I guess, because I've come to realize that there's a lot of very good people out there in this community, and there's a lot of people I honestly love. So I've tried to change for the best.
Has anyone called you out about that? Like maybe accused you of going soft or anything like that?
Oh my gosh, everybody's been doing that the last 3 years. Like, especially since as I've grown in this community, I've grown up as well, and a lot of it has been just having learned kind of life lessons by being in the community and things that have gone on in my personal life. And for good reason, I've tried to, change and look at people as they are rather than things they might say or do out of context. And everybody and their brother has just been like, dude, hey, you're not the most hated man in Magic anymore. You're just working for the most hated man in Magic. And so that's been a part of it too. And so every now and then I still have to rear my pimp hand, I guess would be the proverbial way to put that.
Would you know what to do with yourself if you weren't the most hated man in Magic? Like, let's say you had done that Monday Night Magic appearance, and let's say it went really well. Like, let's say you were smooth and you were polished, and you didn't quite get that feedback, and you didn't quite have that handle following you for a while. Would you have been okay with that and not having that kind of attention, or did some part of you really enjoy that?
Well, I would definitely say I enjoyed it quite a bit, especially just the overt negative reaction that people have sometimes to the things I say and do. But if I had, for whatever reason, taken off, I think that would actually be worse, if you want my honest opinion. Because let's take like somebody like Brian Kibler, okay, or Patrick Chapin, or any of those guys, or anybody you've interviewed that's relatively famous. When they do something or say something that's even slightly out of line, they catch so much shit for it. But when I say or do something that's wrong or out of hand or whatever, people are just like, well, that's just Jack being an idiot again, whatever. But yeah, like, let's say Brian Kibler came out tomorrow and said, I think the L'Oreal I use in my hair just isn't making me as handsome as I used to. I'm going to switch over to Pantene. There would be such outcry from the people that swore by L'Oreal hair care products. I don't know if necessarily I would have liked being successful, because I feel like by having to bust my balls and to try and become better and to really learn how to work in this community and learn to open up to people and listen to them, especially when they talk and things like that, I feel like I've learned more. And I feel like if the road had been easy, it wouldn't have been worth the trials and other crap I've had to go through to get where I am.
Yeah. For me, I find myself in a weird position, especially as my show takes off, where I crave acceptance, and I've craved acceptance my entire life, but I don't know what to do with myself when I have it. I've always wanted to be one of the cool kids, and I've learned to adapt to being the outsider. I was the weird kid in school who didn't know what gender I was, and I went through all of that. And it was one of those things where I used to play Vampire the Masquerade, and they always used to say about the Nosferatu, a monster's only friends are other monsters. So, if people were going to pick on me for being weird, well, I was going to be the best damn weird kid there was. So, I learned to be a really good outsider, and but I still wanted to be cool, and I still used to look at the cool kids and be like, if I could just be like that a little bit, And especially as my show has taken off now, I was the outsider in the WoW community and I was fine with that. I didn't want to be your cool kid. Fuck your cool kid. But it's been very strange for me as my show has taken off and as the Magic community has been so accepting to me, like people like me and I don't know what to do with
Oh, it's
it.
such a weird
And there's this
feeling.
weird part of you that almost wants to stir shit just because that's all you know. That you're so used to being the outsider where it's like, these people like me. I have to make them hate me. That's the only way I can deal. And it's sick, but I've gone through that quite a bit and I struggle with that right now.
No, I know exactly where you're coming from. One email I got that I still remember now is this guy sent me an email, and I've talked often about just not being able to hold conversations. And like when I went to GP Charlotte and I saw that there was 3 million people, not 3 million people, but 3,000 people, I panicked. Like I had to go in a corner and just sit down and absorb how many people I was going to have to interact with that day. But this guy sent me an email and he just was very honest. And he's like, listening to you talk about how awkward it is when you go out in public and how hard it is to hold a conversation with strangers. That's helped me out a lot. And it's good to just know there's somebody else out there going through the same shit. And I just stared at the screen because I didn't know how to respond to that because it wasn't the usual, I can't, you misogynistic neo-Nazi capitalist. I can't believe you said that on Monday Night Magic and you got the card name wrong too. Fuck you. And it's a very strange place to be. I knew exactly where you were coming from.
Yeah. If somebody sends me a nasty email or somebody sends me a nasty tweet, I can be witty enough to fire back right away. But you're right. If somebody sends me a very loving email, I have no idea what to do.
I mean, at least I'm not getting like nude pictures and stuff sent to me now. Now they just try to send me shroom porn, which, whatever.
Yeah, I actually had an email a couple months ago, somebody who happens to be trans, and they're closeted about it. And somebody sent me an email, and he was like, "It makes me so," or she, sorry, she was very happy to know that there are others in the MTG community, especially people like me and Alexis Jansen. And the email said, "I've had a rough time of it lately, and just wanted to let you know that you and your show are a great comfort." And I was like, "What do you say to that? You know, I do a show where I flirt with pro players, and somebody out there is getting comfort from this. I didn't know what to do. I was just like, what do I say?" If she had emailed me and saying you're a bad role model for all trans people, I could have fired off a very witty response in less than 5 seconds. But I didn't know what to do.
See, that's the magic of radio, though, is you take an empty room and you make it full of people.
Yeah, that's very true. So I do what I call stalking my potential guests, and I try to get some information on them, Jack.
I am so sorry if you saw anything out there in my full. Because my dick is all over the internet, so I'm really
You know, I
apologize
was hoping for
of
it, and you taunted me with it, and there was surprisingly no dick. So, no dick, as much as I tried, and believe me, I tried. But I did have a really hard time pinning you down because you've been on a lot of blogs, you've been on a lot of podcasts. Walk me through how you got here today. Like, where have you been?
Oh gosh, I started off with Monday Night Magic originally, and then this was about 5 years ago. I went to this podcast called Mana Screwed, which Tangent and a guy named Rob Martin
Love
was on.
Tangent. Love him.
Oh, Tangent has been a major influence on both convincing me people in the MTG community are good and people out there actually care. He's very supportive and he's very much a role model for a lot of people out there, including myself. So he's a very cool
And
dude.
he's cute. Let's just keep it real.
And I kind of introduced his girlfriend to him, so I have a very special connection to him.
Jack, you know, you're not helping.
But yeah, I was on there, and then I started getting to where I had done probably about 200 episodes of Monday Night Magic and 50 episodes of Mana Screwed, and I got to where I kind of got cocky enough to think that people would want me on their website. So I started throwing out ads like, hey, if you give me a sandwich, I'll write an article for you or some shit. And KYT took the bait originally. And so I did a couple of articles for Mana Deprived, but back in the day, and this is definitely not a problem that Mana Deprived has anymore. They kind of mishandled their editors, and there was a lot of times when I would send something in and it would get significantly delayed. And I take my writing very seriously, so that kind of pissed me off. So I went and I ended up doing a few articles for this place called The Scoop Phase. I started mostly doing writing on my blog just because it was the only place that wouldn't turn me away, and I got to be my own editor. And so things went up when I said they did, instead of random other people. And now I'm writing mostly for MTG Bro-deals when the mood strikes me. And that kind of came around as a collaboration between myself, Dr. Jeebus, and a lot of other social rejects, if you will.
Well, you seem to have forgotten the show. I do recall for a brief time you were a host on a show called Horde of
Oh, Horde of
Notions.
Notions. Oh my gosh, I did forget that. Yeah, and I don't know if anybody from that show is going to be listening to this. That was a show I really, really enjoyed doing for a long time. But there was a lot that went on behind the scenes of Horde of Notions that nobody really knew about.
Like what?
Okay, so without going into too much detail, a certain cast member on there is a bit of an egotist. And there were times when he took things perhaps too seriously. And it got to where it was so abrasive that Noyan, who was one of my favorite co-hosts on there and is still somebody I keep up with, Noyan left. And then it just got to where I felt I was in this very awkward spot because I was the commander guy. And I didn't really have anything relevant to add to their discussion because I just stopped being a grinder entirely. And so I just dropped from the cast. And at that time, I was on good notes with everybody. And I still kept up with Chris Lansdell and a couple of the other people. And then, like I said, that cast member that could be a bit of an egotist, things just kind of grew sour between us. And they asked me to come back for episode 100, but that was several months ago. And I don't even know if they've recorded episode 100 yet. And I doubt they'll ask me to come back on. So
Would you have gone
I
back on? Like, did you say yes?
I would, yeah, I
Okay.
totally said I would have, especially because that particular cast member that I keep referencing wrote a basically a 7-paragraph question to me on Tumblr, saying how he was removing negative people from his life, and that's why they had dropped contact with me, and yada 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 yada. And he kind of challenged me to come back on episode 100, and I would absolutely be more than happy to come back on. I'm fairly sure they're still recording. I'm not sure if they are, but at least they lasted longer than World at War, which is one you didn't mention. Ha ha! Got you on that one.
Crap.
Did you manage to find that one while you were searching?
I heard about it, but again, it was really hard for me to determine like how long you were on. It seemed like one of those
Oh, thank
shows that it
God!
seemed like one of those shows
Yeah.
that burned bright but didn't burn long.
It didn't even burn very brightly, and if it did, it was a distress flare. World at War was the show I did where it was me and Chris Lansdell and this 15-year-old kid that thought it was really cool to make cards and Magic workstation. And we all decided we were going to sit down, and the challenge for World at War was going to be we were going to design an entire set from the ground up
Wow.
and release it. Yeah, and the problem with this was nobody could agree to have a coherent like opinion on anything, and it got to where me and Lansdell were kind of talking behind the scenes on it. We were just like, this kid's, he's 15, he's not listening to anything we say. And we just very politely stopped reading the show notes and showing up on Skype at the appointed time, so it just kind of died out. But yeah, that was probably the most embarrassing thing I've done outside of probably referencing Brian Kibler's hair too often. He's so handsome. Oh my God, he's such a beautiful man.
He definitely, I will never forget, and I think I've talked about this once before. I was the time I was really convinced about his sex appeal was back when he was playing the Kibler Ooze deck. And I remember he was doing a deck tech for a Star City Open, and there was a weird like couple seconds where like the cue card flashed. It was like Brian Kibler with the deck, the deck tech of this Ooze deck. And then a couple seconds went by, and I think he was with Ruben, and Ruben's like looking through his notes or whatever. And Kibler's looking at the camera like, I could have you, and just looking at the camera. And I was like, yes, you could.
I saw him do that and actually get the girl. I was at a GP in Atlanta. I remember now. Okay, and me and my friends were actually talking about Kibler and some of the other pro players, and we had a bet that Kibler could bed somebody at the GP just by walking up and talking to them. And so we kind of all kept a creepy eye on him, like we would glance at him around columns and shit to kind of know where he was and what he was doing. And sure as shit, he was talking to some girl in the convention center, and then she followed him outside and was talking to him, and he was just oozing just charm and style and grace and everything else. And he left the GP after that. So I'm going to make some very base assumptions about what happened with him and this young lady. He's probably not so virtuous anymore.
Well, hey, I've done things at events as well. So I mean, if you can get it, I can't be mad at
Where are these parties that happen? Because like I've heard about all these people getting laid at Grand Prix and at like anime conventions and other shit. I've been to these, and you know what? It's filled with sweaty nerds. Sweaty nerds. I have to push back with deodorant. It's not. No, I think it's a myth. I think it's a myth or a grand joke that people are perpetuating.
I don't know. I think people like Kibler and I, we just sort of exude sex. And I don't know. I just find, I don't know. I mean, mind you, I've never gone into the situation looking for it. Like, I don't want to put that out there, but
Well, that's how sex happens, though, is it just kind
Exactly.
of,
I covered with leaves and somebody just happened to fall in. That's what happened. And that's really what it was. So let's talk about you in the competitive scene, because I didn't even know that you were a grinder. Like, I was under the impression that you were pretty much a long-term casual man, and it seems that that's not the case. So why did you stop playing competitive Magic?
So here's the thing you have to realize about competitive Magic, especially now with WotC actively making it difficult to A, get on the Pro Tour, and B, even if you attend all the events possible, make any kind of real money doing this. Being a grinder, you need to strip away all fallacies you have about it being about for having a good time or making a name in the community or anything like that. If you're a grinder, you're in it to make some sort of profit or to hopefully break onto the Pro Tour where you genuinely are playing this game for money and doing things like that. There is the side of competition and things with being a grinder that's really, really fun, and I can vouch for that. It's very enjoyable and adrenaline pumping and all that other stuff. But being a grinder is a very horrible place to be as a Magic competitor because it's a game of constantly diminishing returns. And the reason I became a grinder was largely the community I was running with at the time. I had a guy named Jake Humphreys, who's my primary commander, card acquirer type person, and a bunch of other guys. And we used to play at this shop called Red Planet Games and Hobbies in my hometown. And we've had guys like Jonathan Suarez, Ali Antrazi, and a bunch of people go through there. So there's always been this just atmosphere of friendly competition and everybody wanting to better everybody else. And I was kind of their pet project because I've played Magic for roughly 13 years, and they decided they wanted to turn the EDH guy into a competitive grinder. Oof. Yeah, and this was back when Extended was still a format right before it died off.
Okay.
So for about a year and a half, I started top eighting FNMs. I'd play test on the weekends. It would just completely eat up all my social time and stuff like that. But I thought there was more in it than just trying to play for the money and play for things like that. And I went to Grand Prix Atlanta, and I didn't day two, but that was kind of the turning point for me there. But what really broke me of competitive Magic was, as much as I enjoyed Magic and as much as I enjoyed running with these competitive people and stuff like that, I realized I could still enjoy the game by not having the pressure of competition upon me. Mm-hmm. And that's largely the reason I stopped being a grinder, because it is a very nerve-wracking position, and it is a game of diminishing returns, because you could go to that GP and you could day two and you could even potentially top eight if you're really, really lucky. But, you know, if you do that and you don't make back the money you spent on gas and a hotel room, or in some cases a plane ticket, then really what was it worth? Like, you had a really good time, but you're still out $500.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what broke me of it. And also, being a grinder consumes more of your daily life than I think a lot of people are willing to invest in it. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people out there with just natural talent that can do well. A friend of mine, Hilario Garcia, who's my primary playtesting partner and stuff like that, Hilario can take a deck of like 30 swamps and a bunch of gray merchants, and he could win the Pro Tour by himself because he's that good. Mm-hmm. But those people are very few and far between. So being a grinder is plotting how good your play skill is and how many hours you've invested in being a good Magic player versus luck and variance, which are still very real elements to the game. And it's just, it's a position that I respect people who do it voluntarily, but I don't advise anybody to get into it, because even as much as you might convince yourself you're doing it for the competition and the fun of competition and things like that, at the end of the day, it's still a game where you're in the long term, your wins are going to be that much more awesome, but your losses are going to be that much more devastating, because they are so financially bound to what you're doing.
Right. And I think it's also, I know one of the things that's been sort of turning me off from it is the fact that I feel like there's a couple of fallacies that go on, and I've always wanted to use that word, so I'm so excited that I finally did. So yay! The first one being is, you know, you always hear people say, you know, it doesn't matter what your record was, or just go to have fun. But at the same time, it's like there's a lot of emphasis being put on the people who do well. And, you know, you do play, you do notice that the atmosphere changes the higher number table you're at, you know. So like, I remember when I was at SCG Milwaukee, Star City Milwaukee, even the lighting was different. So like, once you got into like table 1 through 10, it was brightly lit. You were in like the open part of the hall. And then like, if you didn't do so well and you found yourself at like table 155, you were literally in like the dark, cold corner of the hall. Some of the lights were burned out. And it's like, well, that, I don't care who you are, that kind of bums you out a little bit. And I remember when I started doing well again, like I had lost a couple matches, won a couple matches, I was like, oh, I get back to the light again. Yay. And, you know, it did sort of make me feel bad when I was at the really good table that was comfortable, and then suddenly I was at the cold table away from everybody.
And look specifically at how the community treats people who do well, like Jerry Thompson and a lot of other people. You might just go to play for fun, but I want to be those guys. I want to be those guys who get like, you can act like a douchebag, but people still love you.
Yeah.
That's what I want to be.
Yeah. And even the times where people have gone, like, you know, let's say you went 16th at an SCG event of 500 people, they still don't talk about the person who went 16th. And that's not bad. 16 out of, you know, 500 is not bad, but that person never gets any attention for that, which I think also contributes to the feeling of, you know, doing well but not feeling like you did well and still feeling like you lost. And that's a crummy feeling.
Yeah, and that's a much more severe problem with the higher of competition that you get into in the Magic community. Because mm-hmm. There are a lot of grinders in this community that are extremely talented people and are good and are those people that come in 16th up to, you know, 10th place or whatever the top cutoff is. Nobody ever talks about them. They never get any kind of recognition, and they could be the guys that come up with these amazing format-breaking brews, but they don't get a pat on the back. I mean, they might get some dealer credit, you know, they might get some packs, but they never get the community reception and acclaim that they really need to. And community opinion is a hell of a thing. It can make and break anybody here.
I also think there's not enough talk of variance. I feel like, sometimes it does happen where you did not draw the lands you needed, or your opponent did top deck something they needed. And I feel like when you try to say that, I understand what people are saying where that can be a crutch sometimes, and there are people that will always use that as their excuse. But I feel like there are times when that really does happen, and when you try to tell people, it's, oh, why aren't you taking any blame for this? This was you could have played better, you could have played tighter. No, he really did draw, that card that
Oh
just
yeah.
fucked me. And people don't want to hear that. They want you to take all of the blame. They and if you try to even include variance in the conversation, people think you're using it as an excuse, which I think is terrible.
Yeah, and actually, variance has become, in my very humble opinion, a greater bearing on the game, especially as design has shifted towards creating trumps more than options. And there are a lot of those across several formats now. I mean, look at True Name, Nemesis, and Legacy. What the hell are you going to do if somebody drops that on you and you don't have an answer? Like, you're fucked because of variance and statistics. That's what actually screwed you over, not your misplays.
And I just feel like that's something people could stand to talk about more, especially on a professional level. It's sometimes it's not all about you. I mean, granted, I understand the idea that you can always play better, and I understand taking some responsibility. But even with what I went through this past weekend, when I went on my most recent tilting spree, I had made some comments on Twitter and on my Facebook, and people wouldn't even hear of it. They were like, "Oh, Aaron, you just were misplaying," and just I'm like, "No, like watch me play. Like you could have watched me play and t watch me draw, watch them draw, and tell me that one of us didn't get screwed here." And it's just so weird that people won't even hear of it. We're even in WoW, you'll have a tank die and be like, "Oh, just a lucky string of crits." They can see the numbers. You can see the crit, 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 which is really unlikely. But even they can be like, "It was you just got unlucky." But in Magic, completely unheard of. They will not even talk about it.
Yeah, and that's so weird, especially when any kind of die roll based anything in gaming accepts variance and statistics and everything else as an answer. So it's very strange that in a game where you have a random draw, that doesn't happen. I completely agree with you.
So, do you ever miss it?
Yeah, there's times, especially when Jake and the rest of the guys, they, you know, go four states over. And I'm kind of, you know, Mr. Dad, and I got to stay home and take care of things. And don't get me wrong, I love my family. I love everything about them. They're great. They're great. And my daughter and my wife are the reason I'm not dead right now. And I fully have all my opinion behind that. But there's times when they go off and they get in these crazy adventures. And there's shit that happened when I was a grinder that never would have happened if I hadn't been with them in the car when it happened. Like one of my most famous stories about just traveling the country and shit like this is, Jake's friend one time he had his little brother come with us, and we were kind of all like the 20 to 25 year old people, and he was like, "Hey guys, could y'all like be nice to him, because he's just a young guy and he doesn't really have any friends." And we all decided we were going to welcome him into the group.
How old was he?
He was 15.
Oh my.
Yeah, and you know, when you're that age, it really helps to have that older person be cool with you. And that was one of the things I always wanted. And that was actually one of the things that got me playing Magic and going to FNM, was these cool older people that we had this thing that brought us together. So anyways, this kid was like 15, and we were coming back from Friday Night Magic 2 hours away for Winnabox. It was like 3 or 4 in the morning, and we noticed this Rite Aid was open. And so we pull up to this Rite Aid, and we're like, "Hey man, come on in with us. No matter what we do, just stay stone faced. Act like you're just with us and you're looking after us."
Uh-oh.
And he was like, "Okay." So we go into this Rite Aid, and we act like we were absolutely drunk off our asses, which for me was not much of a stretch. And I go to the back and I grab cling wrap. No. Okay, I grab the biggest box of condoms I can find, like the extra large, like you have a horse dick between your legs condom.
Magnum.
And it was like the like 100-count Magnum box. And I go to the front rack, and there's this girl working there. And I just put them on the counter and kind of like slump over, and I'm re digging in my ass for my wallet. And she rings them up, and she's like, "Well, that'll be yada yada dollars." And I open up my wallet, and I'm like, "Oh fuck, I don't have any mo I don't have enough money for that. Like, oh my God." And she looks really pissed off, and she's like, "Well, you have to go take those back and put them on the rack then." And I said, "Okay." So I kind of stumble on back, And I go through the store, and the whole time the girl is watching us to have any excuse to call the cops. And so I come back to the front. I've got cling wrap, rubber bands, and a bunch of carrots. And I put them on the counter, and I just look at her straight faced. And she sits there a minute, and she looks at me, and she goes, "Sir, I can't advise you do this in any capacity whatsoever." And I'm like, "Just ring it up, by gosh! If I can't make it happen, I'll make it happen." And when we were walking out, we like lifted this kid up on our shoulders, and I think we sang like some kind of 1950s sock hop tune, and we got him back out to the car. But there's shit like that where it was fun, and I'm so glad that happened because it gives me great memories that never would have happened otherwise. And I can honestly say it's usually community-based things that make me miss being a grinder. Like, I don't miss the competition at all. I don't miss the smell of that entrance hall when I walk in, and it's like fried chicken, old soda, and people that masturbated in the sweatpants they're wearing before they came. I don't miss that at all. I especially don't miss like just the death stares from people when you beat them. That's horrible. But the people I met and the times I had and like just the stuff that happened, that's what I miss. I don't really miss being a grinder.
So it seems like Commander has become your preferred format, and you even wrote about it a lot, before you settled down and things like that. What is about Commander that you enjoy more than the other formats?
Absolute freedom. That you can do anything you want in Commander. If you want to have the Tribal Beebles deck, you can have the Tribal Beebles deck. If you want to like do the deck that's based around your favorite video game and you have all these cards that are loosely thematically related, you can do that. You can literally do anything you want to in this format. Now, it might not be good. It's a question of how good it is, but you really can do anything. And because you can do anything, you can place the field goals of where you want your success to be. Like, when I first started playing, I wanted to have the best Shroom deck that ever existed, period. And I'm still working on that a lot, but I have all these options available to me. And it's also a format where you really get to see how well designed the card game is. Like, no matter how old the cards are, you can put them all together and they work seamlessly. And there's something very intriguing and beautiful about that. And it's just a different kind of vibe. With competitive Magic, you've got a lot of people who they pressure you to make tight plays and do all this shit. But in Commander, variance is much more real. There are going to be those moments where you have these absolute blowouts, and it's a much less pressured environment. And because it's much less pressured, there's much more open discussion about building deck list. There's much more discussion about theory and card design and things like that. And you can just get away with a lot more things. It's a much more welcoming community, especially.
So I have to ask, what's the story with you and Shroom? Because there's a lot of talk of Sphinxgina. There's your
Oh,
avatar at
God,
Pro Deals is you snuggling with her. Like, where did this come from? What's this about?
Thank God my wife is out of the house. Because Shroom is just one of those cards that when I actually started looking towards Commander and giving up being a grinder, I noticed it. And originally I thought this card was a piece of shit. But I started playing with it because I thought Shroom was very aesthetically beautiful. I thought she had a beautiful face and she has really big boobs, and that really appealed to me. So I started playing with her and discovering Commander and gradually started building with her. And what was funny is it was the first time I ever had a deck where things just clicked. And it wasn't because I had actually sat down and tried really, really hard to find the bright cards and try really, really hard to make sure the mana base was perfect. The mana base could have been crap, and a lot of my options when I first started playing her, they were bad, and they have significantly improved over time. But she's just the deck that does everything. She does everything I want in a Magic deck and in a Commander deck. She's always got the answers, and she's always got a way out. And that's why I love that deck, and I'm ashamed to admit that I've actually held on to Shroom longer than I've held on to some of my ex-girlfriends. So,
I was going to
yeah.
say, the way you described her just now, if I didn't know that you were talking about a card, I would swear that you were talking about your wife or a partner. Like, she's always
Yeah.
there. She does everything I need. She's Shroom. Like,
Yeah, and I've had some pretty interesting stories about her because she's usually how I've introduced girls and especially my wife to Magic. That was like the icebreaker because they would always like inevitably find the Twitter and the Tumblr and realize that I was having this weird discussion about this giant Sphinx thing. So I had to tell them about it. But yeah, it's just. It's because of the colors and everything else and how well she jives with other artifact decks and things like that. She just does everything. She's so perfect. And she's so beautiful, especially my altered copy I have. There's a story behind that, but I should probably not say on the air.
So you being a commander player, what does it mean to you when you see something like True Name Nemesis make a splash in Legacy? Like, is that something you're happy about, or is there a part of you that thinks it should just sort of stay in commander decks and that shouldn't happen and all that stuff?
Oh, I in no way have that opinion, and I'm going to tell you why. Commander would not exist if it had not been an extremely profitable venture for WotC, okay? The advent of the Commander products, and more specifically, the advent of them being able to reprint legacy staples and things like that through specialty products and new cards, it's nothing but good for the Commander community because what happens is people, they will buy these pre-cons. Either because they're curious about the format, or like many people, they just want True Name Nemesis or Suddenly Absent or whatever the white one's called. And it makes these units move very, very quickly. If you go to any Walmart when they release, usually they're gone within the first Friday
Oh,
they're
yeah.
out there. Yeah. And that's what happened here specifically. You go there and all that's left is that shitty Naya one. Okay. And so because people are voting with their money, it tells WotC that they want more products like this. So I am completely happy with cards like True Name Nemesis and Suddenly Absent making big splashes in Legacy. That's nothing but good for my community.
But what about the stories I heard of people that were literally buying the deck just for True Name Nemesis and then selling everything but that on eBay? Like, that's a little worrisome, no?
No, not
No?
really. I mean, after you buy a product, it's truly up to you to decide what you want to do with it. I mean, if I like bought a pound of weed and from my dealer and I decided to like go and split that up into a bunch of little nuggets, like that's kind of up to me after that point. And it's the same thing with buying Commander product and things like that, or buying dual decks and getting rid of the alt art cards in it. Whatever you do with it after that is up to you. I think what would be more concerning is the spikes in the secondary market, which ultimately nobody can really control at this point.
I will say I'm a little jealous, though, that the legacy players get to enjoy those cards because when I saw Toxic Deluge, I think it is,
Oh, that card's beautiful.
oh, I was aroused because I wanted a new Mutilate so bad, and unfortunately we didn't get any sort of black board wipe with Theros, unless you count the Gorgon, but she really doesn't count. But I remember when I saw Toxic Deluge, I'm very much a standard player, and I was like, oh my God, I would sell my mother to gypsies for this card. And all my standard friends were like, or my legacy friends were like, we get to use it in legacy, and I was like, oh, and I was so
And
jealous.
that card's even seen playing vintage. That tells you how strong it
Yeah, and
is.
I was like, oh God, I'm like, gimme, and very jealous. So you are once known for being a heavy drinker on a lot of the shows that you appeared on,
Oh
and
yeah.
you recently stopped. What made you decide to do that?
I would love to say it was just my wife and my daughter, but they were honestly just a small factor to it. They got me to where I was away from the booze a lot, which helped. But what really broke me of it was I had been drinking pretty heavily since I was about 16, which is a very young age to start drinking, I'm aware. But in my county especially, there's nothing here. So you do like some kind of drug or drink, and you have some hobby that you do, and that's how you break in with your social circles. And being the extremely awkward nerd that I was, I played Magic and drank whiskey, and that was my thing. So I just kept drinking and kept drinking, and especially when I moved out on my own, booze was much more readily available then. I didn't have to like lie and come in with this backpack that was clanging into my parents' house and things like that. And so I got to where I was drinking about a gallon of whiskey every 2 days. And at that point, I was so much of an alcoholic that I knew how to hide it very well. And I knew how to act like I was functioning completely fine. And I'm in a small town, but my nearest neighbor is 30 minutes away. So I could just come home to an empty house and drink and drink and drink and drink and drink. And especially when you're isolated like that, which wasn't very healthy for me, but I did it because I had some innate need to be by myself. It does a lot of things to you. And I got to where I was drinking so much that I don't want to say I was hallucinating, but I was waking up with night terrors and shit like that, and I was drinking to take care of the night terrors. And I would eventually get to where I was so drunk, I would just pass out until the next day and then get up and, quickly shave and throw some deodorant on and make it look like I was clean and put on a fake smile and go out into the world and do my job. And that's a very self-destructive habit, but it was something that I started doing because I'm a very compulsive person. And it just got to a point where a lot of crazy shit started happening because I was drinking. I don't know if you've ever watched the comedian Dave Attell.
No, I haven't, but I do know who he is.
Okay. Dave Attell once talked about alcoholism as time traveling. And it's a perfect description of it because there were whole weeks in my life where I would wake up and I'd have a bottle in my hand and, you know, my friends would be on the couch playing Xbox or something. And I'd take a swig of whiskey and I'd pass back out. And then I would wake up and I would be at the local diner sitting there trying to write a book. And I'd pass out and wake back up and I would be in my house completely naked, sweating. Like that's just things that are horrible to both wake up to and experience. And then there were things that happened that I've actually never really told anybody, which being the lady who can cough up secrets, I will actually tell this story.
Oh my.
Yeah. There was one time when I was about 20 and I woke up and I was in a bed and I thought it was my bed. And then I noticed the sheets were pink. And I was like, my sheets aren't pink. Wait a minute. I don't even have sheets on my bed. And so I rolled over and there was a girl. And I didn't know who this girl was. And that was a very scary thing to wake up to. So I very quietly get out of this bed and I find my clothes and I put my clothes on and I walk out of this girl's house and I start patting myself down. I don't have my wallet. I don't have my keys. But I have my phone, thank God, but I don't have any bars. So I had to walk 5 miles down the road to even get a signal.
Wow.
And I called, yeah, and I called my friend up and I was just like, dude, I don't know where the fuck I'm at. I was woke up in somebody's house. Like, can you figure out where I'm at? And he was like, yeah, you know, like, we'll come get you, dude. Just like find a roadside or something. So I had to walk another 5 miles and I finally stopped at this truck stop. Where naturally they had no phone signal whatsoever, but they had a payphone, as antiquated as that was. So I called my friend up and told him where I was, and he came and got me. And somehow, some way, I had wound up in South Carolina, and I don't even know how that happened.
Wow.
I don't know like who that girl was or what happened when I was at her house. I hope it was nothing too nefarious for obvious reasons, but I just somehow got to South Carolina, and I give my friend credit. He didn't, you know, came by, he didn't say anything. He just picked me up and he got me back to my house. And he was like, dude, you really need to never do that again. And I was like, I know. Oh God, drinking's horrible. It's the devil. So as soon as he left, I drank.
Oh,
and yeah. And it was just this very self-destructive pattern where I'm really surprised I didn't die of alcohol poisoning. And there were a lot of other contributing factors to it. I mean, I went through deep, black depression where I thought about killing myself all the time and things like that. And then eventually my wife came back to our hometown and she started coming by to see me because we've been in love since we were in middle school. Mm. I just was never mature enough to fully appreciate her until I got older. And she started coming by, you know, just to check up on me. And then one day she kind of noticed all the booze and she noticed all the empty bottles in the trash and stuff like that. And she noticed there was no food in my fridge. But there was booze. There was always booze.
Yeah.
And so she started coming by and just checking up on me regularly and making sure I was okay and coming by and bringing me food and things like that. And then there was one day I woke up and I just had a horrible, like, pounding jackhammer of a headache. And I, again, it was another night I was completely naked and it was had been the dead of winter. And she was at the stove fixing food and I got up and I just was moaning and groaning and in pain. And she came over and fed me like a kid. And that was very emasculating, but it was a very caring, kind, considerate gesture. And after I eventually woke up, she was like, yeah, so I called you last night and you didn't answer. And I came over here to make sure you were okay. And you were outside vomiting. So you're going to stop drinking now.
Wow.
And I was just like, okay. And she's like, and I'm going to take all the booze in the house and I'm going to throw it away. And I was like, no, don't do that. And when I said that, like that came out of my mouth and I realized I cared that much about the booze. That was a big fucking deal.
Was that your bottom?
I wouldn't say that was my bottom. My bottom was actually when I was drunk and I had to drive to the birth of my daughter.
Oh.
That, yeah, like it got to where I was really bad. And,
Even after waking up in another state in a bed you don't know, even after you're having your now wife feed you and tell you she's going to do these things, you still went back to drinking after these two times?
Yeah, and wow. The thing is, as you know, you talked about being addicted to soda, but when you're really addicted to something, you don't really acknowledge that you have a serious problem. And it's like I was saying a moment ago, I'm an extremely compulsive person. If there's like cake around me, I'm gonna eat the cake just because it's there. If and there was just always booze in the house, and there was always money in my pocket if there wasn't booze, and I could go get the booze. And honestly, when Riley was born, I was sitting on the couch and I'd had a couple of beers and I'd already significantly cut back on my drinking. I stopped drinking as whiskey nearly as much, and I'd cut back to drinking beer, and I fucking hate beer so much. So that had a lot to do with it, cutting back on the drinking as well. But my wife called me and she was like, "Oh, hey baby, my water broke, and I'm at the mall, so I'm gonna go do a couple of like go to a couple of shops, and then I'm gonna go on to the hospital." And even as drunk as I was like, "Holy shit, like no, you need to go to the hospital right fucking now." She was like, "No, I'm just gonna go for a walk and see how things go, and that'll be good, right?" And I hate to say this, how pregnant women are hormonal. She didn't really realize what she was saying. So it was like, "No, I'm gonna come over there right now, and I'm gonna pick you up, and we're gonna go to the hospital." And I like hung the phone up, and I sat there, and I was like, "Dude, you're drunker than shit, and you have to drive your wife who's going into labor to the hospital. You have to do this though." And I was like, "All right, time to act like I'm as sober as possible." So I got in my car and I managed to get us to the hospital and everything okay, but and we got through the birth, and it was totally terrifying. Like, regardless of what other people tell you about children being born, it's terrifying. And so we got through all that. And I got to hold Riley, and I was sitting there, and I was like, "Wow, I really need to never fuck up ever again, because she deserves better than this." And that's what turned things around for me, was seeing Riley look up at me. She's just this little like bundle in a pink blanket with a little tuft of head on her head, a tuft of hair on her head, and she looked up at me, and just a little tear rolled down her cheek, and that completely turned everything around.
I found your Tumblr post about this. It's called Man in a Bottle, and you acknowledge the fact that you're not cured either, and you use quotations
Oh
around
no.
the word cured, and you mention about the fact every day I wake up wanting a drink. Is that still true?
Yeah, and there's still times when I'm sitting there and like we'll eat corn or something, and I remember corn liquor I had 4 or 5 years ago, because that's what people do around here. We make meth and moonshine and go hunting, and that's all we really do. And I'll remember that, and I'll just sit there and I'm like, "Man, some corn liquor would be so good right now." But I have to remember that I have to remember the person I was and the path I was on and things like that, and that really turns it around. And I'm not gonna lie, I've gone out with friends a couple of times, and over the last 4 months I've been almost completely sober. But like, I'd go out one night with my friends and I had a beer and that was it. And then, like a month or two later, I would have one beer with people that I wouldn't even finish. So yeah, I definitely wake up wanting to drink, and I definitely go to bed thinking alcohol would be a great way to fall asleep. But I've come to realize and accept that there's no way I'm ever going to go back to what I was doing, because if I did, it would not only kill me, it would kill my family.
You also said something else at the end of that post that really stood out to me. You said, "I felt I had to get it out because only recently have I come to terms with the fact I was a coward about drinking the entire time." Do you feel braver since you made that confession on your Tumblr?
Oh no, I was still absolutely a coward about drinking, and I'm still a coward about drinking. Even sitting here talking to you about how much I drank and things like that, I've never told people those stories. And had I done that, maybe somebody out there would have been like, "Dude, you need help. Like, call me, talk to me." And especially since I have been more open, Angelo Paglucci, the guy who does PitMs, Angela's been really good about talking to me about drinking and addiction and things like that. But it's one of those things where I had to work through it myself and talk to people about it, and I had to be willing to open up about it, because I'm very secretive, I'm very secluded about how I handle things, and that's not a good way to go through life. You have to open up to people, you have to open up to your friends and accept them, and that's really what becoming a father, and especially being in this community, has taught me, is it's okay to love other people. Even if you don't love yourself, they can help you get to that point where life does get better, and they do love you and they do care about you, and it's okay to love them back for who they are.
So before we go, let's talk about love. Let's talk about your family. Does your wife know about the Jack LaCroix? Does she know? What does she know
Oh
about
yeah.
you?
Well, Tiffany has known me since we were both roughly 10 years old. So she's seen me at my worst and she's seen me at my best. And she didn't really know about the whole Monday Night Magic thing or anything for a long time, but it got to where I was just gone on the weekends. And at first she would assume I was out drinking with other people, but then as we got to be more serious, it was like, you know, hey, what do you do when you disappear for days at a time and come back looking haggard on Monday? So I started very slowly telling her that there was this little thing I did that had like however many of hundreds of thousands of listeners it was at the time. And so she started following me on Twitter and she started following me on Tumblr, especially as I did more and more writing at both of those places. And I can say she's gotten more than her share of the shit I get into on a daily basis on both of those services. And she accepts that as a part of me. Like she's come to accept that I'm going to say some very horrible things and not necessarily mean them. And like, gosh, the other night we were joking about how best to fix the economy, and because homelessness and things like that are a serious problem where I'm from. Yeah. I'm from the ninth poorest city in the nation. Mm. Oh, it's awesome. But so I was like, you know what we should do? We should like just cannibalize homeless people. Like that's what we should do. And we can even like, no, we can turn this into something. We can like make it a national sport so it's okay and have like a politician behind it. And we can put a spin on it, like call it like hungry, hungry hobos or something. Or like you send them after like some kind of meal and you have people hunting them because they're hungry. And that's how it works and it's perfect. And I like this is shit we joke about on a daily basis because we're both really horrible people and we love each other because of it. And she doesn't really seem to mind or notice that. She does get a bit concerned sometimes when sometimes I have flirtatious friendships with some of the people I talk to.
You're not flirting with me. Both those have tried.
But especially some of the members from other communities, let's say it that way, she gets a bit concerned then because I'm her Jack and she doesn't want anybody else to have me. But that's usually all she gets concerned about. Or if I say something really horrible, she'll be like, Jack, you really need to know that we have a daughter. And she's probably going to find your penis on Google, and she's going to find these other horrible things you've said. So please just be considerate of the things you write.
Does she play magic at all? Is she interested at all in it?
Oh, God, no. Like, the times I've tried to teach her, usually I ended up making out with her, which is so much more of an entertaining play than trying to teach her how to play Shroom. She's not really much of a gamer, because we enjoy talking to one another and interacting with each other so much that we just usually give up on the games and just end up, you know, saying, hey, let's go rob some homeless people or something. And we'll give them a can of food and we'll roll it down the alley and watch them chase it. Like, let's do that together. Let's make a night out of it. But she'll occasionally watch me like over my shoulder play computer games and make fun of how badly I get shot in the face. Hmm.
Do you plan on teaching your daughter how to play?
You know, when it comes to teaching kids what to do and how to do things and all this, I really like to think that Riley's going to be somewhat of a little nerd, yeah, like me and her mother are. But, you know, if she grows up and she becomes a soccer player or like an artist or some crap and has no interest in games whatsoever, that's cool, too. I just want my kid to be happy.
Yeah.
And as a parent, I don't really see how you can want more for your children than that.
Yeah. So last question I have for you before we go, Jack. How much of what we see of you, how much of what we see as Jack LaCroix is really you, and how much of it is a persona or is embellished?
Oh, I mean, I got a rep to maintain. So like all day, every day is what you see, and that's what you get, girl. Because I'm the whole package or whatever. Honestly, I usually the first thing people say to me when they meet me in person is I'm nowhere near as much of a jackass as they thought I was going
to
be.
I get that too. I remember when I went to BlizzCon, and the number one compliment I kept getting was "You're nicer in person," and I'm like,
see, I find that really odd because you're usually nice when I talk to you on Twitter and shit. Like I. Whatever. Like, I would argue about 50-50. Okay. that seems like a good, safe number. We'll go with that.
Okay, so if I were to go to, like, you know, a GP nearby, and let's say you happen to be there, would I be disappointed, or would you be spot on what I expect you to be?
I think you would be surprised at how incredibly quiet I was,
yeah,
and how much I just sat there and listened to you instead. I am horrible at making conversation. It's like when I got to meet Marshall from Limited Resources one time, and I went up to him, and Marshall was like, fucking ginormous, so I had to look up to talk to him, and I shook his hand and I was just like, hey Marsh, how are you? And he's like, oh hey Jack, how are you doing really good? And I was like, yeah. And I just kind of sat there and stared at him, and he was like, wow, you really don't talk very much, do you? And I was like, ah, no, not at all. thankfully Chewie came up and saved me from my embarrassment. Like, that was so wonderful. He is such an amazing, like, ginger teddy bear of security.
I just imagine you sort of like doing the Precious Moments pose where like the boy is trying to flirt with the girl and he's looking down at the ground and like kicking the dirt, and the girl's waiting for him to like say a little more. He's like, so do you wanna hang out sometime? And he's just kicking the dirt, and I imagine, you know, big tall Marshall looking down at you. Yeah.
I am that bad. Yeah. The fact I'm married and I reproduced, I think should speak testaments to the fact that there's somebody out there for everyone, or at least somebody that's willing to have sex with you. Like, that's a thing too. So, you know, good on you guys. Like, keep your head up.
If Jack LaCroix can procreate, so can you. So, Jack, if people have enjoyed listening to you on the show, where can they find you? How can they get a hold of you?
Oh, wow. I don't know why they would. They can definitely read my shit and should anyways go to mtgbrodeals.com, which is, again, where I write for. And we've got some amazing content producers, Renee and Trevor and Angelo and Dr. Jeebus, Zach Hartman, all those people. They're all amazing, and they are all really good friends of mine. So you guys should definitely go to there. You can bug me on Twitter, of which I'm on every day, all day, probably until I go to sleep, at Jack LaCroix, JACKLACROIX. If you want to ask me any question whatsoever, or perhaps read some of my non-magic related shit, you can go to jackfromnc, all one word, .tumblr.com. Mm-hmm.
And you also mentioned recently that you're going to start putting out some books. Is that true?
Yeah. I over the last year, I actually decided that I was going to take my fiction writing, which is very subpar and shitty, and nobody should read it for any
reason
whatsoever.
It is not.
It totally is.
No.
But I decided I had to take it seriously, and I was going to start writing some books. So I've got a fiction anthology, which should be going up on random, crappy self-publishing websites nobody's paying attention to, like Amazon, Smashwords, and a couple of other places. I'm aiming to be done the first quarter of next year, so it can be anywhere from January to March. The book's going to be about 150 pages and hopefully will at the least warrant people leaving a one-star review.
You have to promise to come back on my show and do a book reading.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'll read it in whatever dramatic voice you want me to. So some of those stories are really disgusting, and I think in some way reading them like an underage schoolgirl or something to your audience would be perfect.
I did that once when 50 Shades came out. I was at one of my friends was having like a Tupperware party or something really corny, and I saw that she had 50 Shades on her bookshelf, and I would just read passages in different accents. So I would do like the English version. I'd be like, you know, as Christian touched me in my lower regions, and then I would shift to the Southern voice and be like, I never felt such an ache and burn in my lower regions in my life. And I would just break it down in different voices, and people seem to really enjoy that. So I think if you were to do a reading, Jack LaCroix, if you come on my show and do a reading, this is the voice you have to do, okay? Okay. Are you familiar with Robin Williams?
Yeah, I could probably not properly emulate that, but I actually used to.
There's a certain Robin Williams you have to do.
Oh,
okay,
God.
Did you ever see Robin Williams live on Broadway?
Yes.
Okay. When he was talking about Winston Churchill reading Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, God, I just spat my coffee out.
And he does the Winnie the Pooh. Like, that is how you need to read your book. When you come on and do your book reading, I want you doing Churchill as if you were reading Winnie the Pooh.
I think reading the story about the masturbating dimension wizard would be perfect for that.
Well, I can't wait. So thank you so much for coming on the show, Jack. This was a very huge thrill for me, and I feel like I've learned so much more about you, and hopefully other people have too, and now I'm even more excited to meet you.
Aaron, I'm incredibly flattered you wanted to have me on, because you might not think this about yourself, but you're magic famous, and you're also really, really important to all the content producers out there, so this was very, very important to me as well, so thank you very much for having me on. I greatly appreciate it.
Anytime. And if anyone else is listening and you've enjoyed what you've heard here on The Deck Tees, you can always find me first and foremost on legitmtg.com. You can also find the show on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Feel free to leave me a positive review and some stars. The show is on Twitter at The Deck Tees. I am on Twitter at Original Estrus. That's OriginalOestrus. You can also write me or drop me a line, estrus@elitistjerks.com. Thank you guys so much for listening, and take care of yourselves, okay? Bye.